Gladstone on Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 is jam-packed with important information, preventative maintenance, and all sorts of home tips to keep your house in great shape and your family safe. We have special guests on heating, cooling, environmental issues, and we make it fun with trivia contests and prizes. Don't let that home fall apart around you. Join us Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 on Around the House with Steve Gladstone on 1490 WGCH.
The opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio. And now, the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour on 1490 WGCH.
Good afternoon, folks. You're listening to Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Hour on 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere. This is Beth O'Malley, and I am here today with Tom Nash, acupuncturist and traditional Chinese medicine doctor. Welcome, Tom.
Hi, Beth. Nice to be here.
It's wonderful to have you here. I'd like to let our listeners know a little bit about your history. Tom and I have been friends for years, and he was an addictions counselor for 25 years prior to becoming a Chinese herbal medicine and a specialist and acupuncturist. And when I met you, you were no longer in the field of substance abuse, but you're working as an acupuncturist specializing in psychiatric illness and treating people with mental health issues. In addition, Tom works with folks around other types of concerns, medical concerns, and we'll be talking about that today, as well as some of the other types of Chinese medicine. Chinese medicine basically goes back 2,500 years, and Tom has educated people as a professor of Chinese medicine and knows more about the history of Chinese medicine than anyone I've ever met. So on that note, Tom, I'd like to ask, what got you to make the transition from doing substance abuse and counseling to moving into Chinese medicine?
Good question, Beth. This all happened around 1990. About 2000, as you said. And I was going through a major change in my life at that time. I had just recently gotten divorced. I had moved from an island off the coast of southern Georgia back to New York, primarily to help take care of my aging parents, but also to reconnect with my high school girlfriend, who is now my second wife. Mm-hmm. I had had a number of jobs in mental health as well as addictions and was slowly being promoted into administration, which was something that I didn't really enjoy doing all that much. If I had wanted to run a business, I would have probably gone to business school, but I liked working with people. And as I moved into administrative jobs, I did less and less in that. I had less contact with patients till finally I basically had none. It was also a time, as I know you're aware, where insurance coverage for both mental health and addiction suddenly started being very, very, very restricted. And so there was a lot of disorder, maybe to put it that way, in our field. I felt like the most creative decisions sometimes I had to make as a program director was who I could lay off that would have the least negative effect on the quality of the program. So I was looking for something different. I was looking for something that would be challenging, that would help me to put me back in a position where I worked with people, where I worked with them body and mind. Again, in the addiction field, as you know, we do a lot of sophisticated work with people's psychosocial needs. But when they're not in group, they're sitting in the day room smoking cigarettes, chugging coffee, and eating candy. Seem like the best possible solution to me. The final thing that made me make the change was my own history of chronic migraine headaches. And I had tried everything that Western medicine had to offer to deal with them and didn't find any solution or any relief. And when I started getting acupuncture, it was like I got my life back again. It was a miracle. And I thought, wow, I want to learn more about this. This is amazing. And that's what led me to do it.
Oh, terrific. You know, as you were talking about the sugar and candy, I remember back 20, 25 years ago when they would actually recommend in rehab, when you go back home to your house, fill up your nightstand drawer with candy bars. And that was advice.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So then everyone ended up moving from using alcohol and drugs into, you know, eating sugar and candy bars nonstop because they're filling that need for sugar. And that's not healthy either. Now, you also became a full-time faculty educator at the Tri-State College for Acupuncture. When did you start teaching herbal medicine and Chinese medicine?
Actually, interestingly, I was still a student when I did my last year in graduate school, getting a master's degree in Oriental medicine. I started teaching part-time because I had some background in a couple of areas that we had to study but lay outside the specialty of Chinese medicine, specifically a history course, the history and philosophy of Chinese medicine. I had a minor in college in that area. And then also a course in, what did we call it? But it was some form of counseling, how to deal with patients, how to interact with patients, how to be able to understand patients, particularly the more problematic ones or ones who had an emotional or psychiatric illness. And because of my background, I was hired to teach that class. So as soon as I graduated, I was hired full time.
Oh, that's interesting.
And actually, Tri-State is the third school that I've taught at.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, your private practice is currently based out of Hicksville, Long Island. And obviously, you know, I've been harassing you to trying to convince you to open up here locally in Greenwich because you are a Greenwich resident.
That's right.
Yep. So one day, I'm still holding my breath, but we'll see how that goes. All right. You do a lot of different types of, in Chinese medicine, there are a lot of different types of treatments. There's acupuncture, there's herbal medicine, there's medical massage, and that has a Chinese name. Is it
Tuina.
Tuina, mm-hmm. Okay. There's cupping, microbleeding, there's scraping, and that in Chinese is
Gua sha.
There's moxibustation.
Moxibustion.
So these are things that I'm really not that familiar with, and I'd like to do kind of an overview of what they all are.
Okay, so when we use the word Chinese medicine, although actually today it's being supplanted by the term East Asian medicine because there are traditions of the same types of medicine in Vietnam, in Korea, in Japan. So the more inclusive term East Asian medicine is what's technically used. Excuse me. But when we talk about the traditional forms of East Asian medicine, we talk about it having five pillars. And those are acupuncture and moxibustion are one together. Moxibustion is the burning of mugwort, powdered mugwort formed into cones and either placed on points and burned down close to the skin so that you feel the warmth of it, or sometimes put on the actual head of the needle. So we insert a needle, we put a little ball of mugwort on the head of it, and we light that on fire so it warms the needle.
What is mugwort?
Mugwort, it's an herb.
Ah, okay.
Chinese mugwort. It grows all over the New York area for some reason, particularly along railroad tracks. Huh. There's tons and tons of it.
Okay.
And some of my former students who are Korean, their parents go out and pick it and dry it and use it in cooking as an herb.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's moxibustion. So acupuncture and moxibustion together form one of the five pillars. The second one is Chinese herbal medicine, which, again, goes back at least 2,500 to 3,000 years. Some of the same herbs we're using today. So they've really got a history of being field-tested on human beings. We know what they do. We know what they are capable of. We know when to use them, when not to use them, what are the contraindications, etc. And by using the Materia Medica, the original Materia Medica published around 100 AD had about 360 herbs in it. The current one that's being worked on that's supposed to come out in a couple of years, the official one in China, has something like 10,000 substances in it. So it's grown tremendously. not any herbalist knows all 10,000, obviously. Most of us have a working knowledge of a couple of hundred. And I should really say substances, not herbs, because some of them are of animal origin or even minerals. But again, herbal medicine is the second pillar of Chinese medicine. Chinese medical massage, or as we said, tui na, is the third. Teaching patients lifestyle kinds of issues like traditional Chinese dietary therapy, and teaching them qigong or movement exercises that would be good for their condition. And then there are specialized forms of treating children or pediatrics that don't involve the actual insertion of needles, but involve scraping along the skin and putting pressure on different points.
Interesting. Okay. So, and that would be the fourth pillar.
The fifth, I think that
the
is.
Fifth.
I think we're up to five.
Fifth, yes,
yeah.
you're right. We are. Now, when you talk about 10,000 different substances, is that 10,000 unique substances, or might that one be a combination of several?
No, those are the individual substances. When you study Chinese herbology, you do it in three steps. The first one, which is actually three semesters worth of work, you learn the individual herbs, the component parts. The second part, again, three different semesters, is learning the formulas, the traditional classical formulas. And Chinese herbology never prescribes, or I shouldn't say never, but almost never prescribes a single herb. We always prescribe a formula with herbs working together to enhance their action or to moderate their action on each other. To provide a more beneficial effect. And then the third and final step is, again, three semesters, is the clinical application of those formulas and how to modify them.
Okay.
The one absolute thing about all forms of East Asian medicine is that it's always individually tailored to a specific patient's needs. So if I'm giving you a traditional classical formula and I give the same formula to the next patient, they're probably going to be a little bit different because I know this particular herb doesn't suit you and that particular herb isn't strong enough for them, so I've got to add something else. So every formula gets individualized to the person's needs.
Oh, I see. And when you're doing a formula for a person, are you addressing both medical and emotional needs together?
They can. I mean, one of the things that's interesting about Chinese medicine is when we diagnose somebody, there's always two parts to the diagnosis. One is what is called the disease name. So that would be something like migraine headaches or menstrual irregularity or knee pain or back pain. And then the second part is what we call the root diagnosis, and that's the underlying energetic imbalance. So it has names like things like liver qi stagnation or spleen qi deficiency or kidney yang deficiency. But some of those same patterns can cause emotional and psychiatric issues as well. So if a patient comes in with low back pain, frequent urination, nighttime urination, knee pain, and depression, all of those can be caused by the same pattern, which is kidney yang deficiency. So both an acupuncture point prescription and an herbal formula could treat all of those simultaneously.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's really a different way of thinking about illness than a traditional American approach.
Instead of looking at it as what's the specific pathogen that's causing the illness, again, we look at these underlying patterns. And any pattern can have physical manifestations, they can have psychiatric manifestations, they can have lifestyle type manifestations.
That's incredible. And that's why it's really considered whole body treatment.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so I'm curious about something that a few of my clients have mentioned recently in coming back from inpatient treatment for substance abuse for drugs and alcohol. I have two clients who are currently going on an outpatient basis to see me for therapy. I have them working with a psychiatrist or nurse practitioner that I work closely with for medication management, but they're also practicing both yoga and meditation. And the new piece for me is both clients were recommended for acupuncture, but it's a different type of acupuncture where there's, I think that they call it stem. It's a vibration that goes with the acupuncture. Is that something that's new?
E-stim, which is short for electrical stimulation.
Ah, okay.
It's basically almost exactly like a TENS unit, but instead of attaching to a pad that you put on a sore muscle, it attaches directly to the needle. So you insert the needle, you attach the lead, and then you set it to stimulate, bzz, 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 bzz,
yes.
And you can feel it going directly into the muscle tissue.
That's interesting. So an E-stem is something that's used when you go to see, I know once I had a herniated disc, and when I went to the physical therapist, they used this little suction kind of a thing with a little bit of electronic pulse.
Right, right. It's the same thing, but again, attached to a needle, not any other kind of thing that's attached to your body.
So it probably just looks a little more scary.
Yeah, I mean, but usually if you've already had acupuncture, it doesn't look a whole lot scarier
right,
than that.
Right, right. Yeah. You could tell that I haven't had acupuncture yet. How do you handle that when you have someone who comes in who is afraid of needles?
Well, I have a couple of answers for that. For the most part, if they're really afraid of needles, they're probably not coming in, except for kids. And kids come in a lot of times because their parents drag them, and they come in kicking or screaming. And
sure.
What they find out is I'm one of the practitioners who knows how to treat kids without needles. So I will treat them using – there's a combination of Japanese techniques that goes by the term shonishin. And again, as I said earlier, that involves scraping on the channels, putting pressure on the points, using cupping, things like that. And kids find out, hey, none of that stuff hurts. And after a while, they'll usually concede to getting one needle. And if that's okay, then the next time they come in, maybe two. And before I know it, you know, they've got 8 or 10 needles in them.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. What age can a child start treatment?
Well, in China, they needle babies. They needle infants.
Wow. Yeah. I'm assuming not here.
We could, and I have, but not for the most part, because people aren't going to bring a baby in
right.
To get needled. Although, again, with the shonishin techniques, they can, and one of the things that I've treated a number of times is like constipation in an infant.
Oh, wow.
And it's really effective to the extent that sometimes they don't get out of the office.
Before, without making a mess.
Before the dams break. Yeah. Also nausea. You know, kids who, you know, are constantly spitting up milk, it's very effective for that too.
Oh, wow. So what about, what is that, when colic?
Right.
That would...
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wish I knew you back when. All right. In terms of acupuncture, is that the most common form of East Asian medicine in the States?
Yes, absolutely. That's most people know it. Know that, and probably nothing else.
And now, well, I think with. Is it Michael Phelps was using cupping?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And so that became a little more mainstream. Did you see an increase in people wanting to participate in cupping treatment?
Yeah, it happened first in the last Olympics when the Chinese swimmers had the cupping marks on their back and everybody was asking what that's about. And finally NBC did a little, you know, one of their 5-minute human interest things on it. And then again, after Michael Phelps obviously had the cupping marks, a lot of interest then. There was also, I think it was Jennifer Aniston, came to one of the award ceremonies wearing a backless gown with cupping marks all the way down her back. So whenever something like that happens, yes, we get phone calls and, you know, somebody asking about, well, can you use that for this? Or I'd like to do, you know, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes, again, there's some of those needle phobic patients and they want to get cupped without needling. Which I'll do. Some acupuncturists, for some reason, shy away from that. It's like, if you don't get a needle, don't come in.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh, so they typically go together. I want to learn more about what cupping is, why it's effective, how it works. And so what we're going to do is take just a brief break and come back, and we'll talk a bit more about some of the other techniques other than just acupuncture. You are listening to Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Hour at 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
As we go through the afternoon, a few more sprinkles and cloudy skies, but the temperatures are warming up nicely. We're looking at mid and upper 40s, and we'll have cloudy skies for the rest of the afternoon. Tonight, skies are going to clear out. The low is about 32 degrees of the Sound Shore to about 24 north and west. Sunshine Tuesday, the high is 42. Have a great afternoon. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490 WGCH.
This is Margaret Walsh of Greenwich Library. The end of summer hours at the library signals the return of one of our most popular programs, the Friends Friday Film Series. Started back in the 1950s, the film series featured movies once a month. Former Greenwich Library film librarian Wayne Campbell expanded this program in the 70s to a film every Friday. Although now retired from the library, Mr. Campbell continues to select the films and introduce each one with some fun facts and background information. The movie selections include blockbuster new releases, independent films, foreign films, and classics. Special selections are made to tie in with other library programs such as Greenwich Reads Together. The screenings take place in the library's Cole Auditorium. Showtime is always 8 p.m. and doors open at 7:40 unless otherwise stated. There is no charge and admission is open to all. I'm Margaret Walsh of Greenwich Library on 1490 WGCH.
Good afternoon, Greenwich. You are listening to Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Hour at 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere. This is Beth O'Malley. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. It's a cold, rainy day out there. We had our first little bit of snow last night, which was so wonderful to look out, but it was even better when I woke up and had to get the kids off to school and the snow was gone. So that was fabulous. I am here today with Tom Nash. Tom was in the field as an addictions counselor and mental health therapist for 20 years. So he was in my field, and he made a pretty significant transition to another field. He moved into Chinese herbal medicine, also referred to nowadays as East Asian medicine, and acupuncture, and he taught at the New York College of Health Professionals, the Pacific College of Oriental Medicine, and is currently on the faculty of the Tri-State Area College of Acupuncture. He also maintains a small private practice in Hicksville, New York. And when we took a break a few moments ago, we were just moving from talking about acupuncture to starting to explore some of the other East Asian techniques, like herbal medicine, cupping, microbleeding, and scraping. So I'd like to ask you to start with explaining what these techniques actually are. What is cupping and how does it work?
Well, cupping is very simply putting suction cups on the body. The traditional way of doing it is called fire cupping, where you take usually a glass cup. I mean, it's not your mother's teacup, although cupping is a cross-cultural phenomenon, and a lot of my patients will tell me their grandmother used to put literally teacups on their back if they're from Eastern Europe or the Middle East or some areas where it's fairly common. But they're specialized round cups, and as I say, fire cupping is where this isn't traditional, but we use an alcohol swab on tweezers, and we light it on fire, and we stick it in the cup and pull it out, and that creates a vacuum. And then you immediately put it on typically the person's shoulders or mid-back or low back or, you know, any big muscle like that. Fire cupping is very effective. I had the unfortunate experience of burning my daughter doing it once. So I don't do it anymore. I do what's called suction cupping, which is a modern invention from Korea where the cups have little valves and a pump. So you put it on the back and you put the pump, connect it to the valve, and you go ch-ch-ch-ch-ch, and it pulls the air out, and now the cup is stuck to the back.
And what does this do for the back?
The cupping has a number of different uses, but the one that it's most effective for is long-term chronic pain, either in, as I said, in the shoulders or the back, the low back, the buttocks, you know, anywhere like that where the muscle is in spasm. And what the cupping does is it pulls fresh blood into the area so that that can, you know, lubricate the muscle tissue and allow it to relax. It's also... It just feels really good, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's so similar to maybe how I might feel in a massage.
Yes, very similar, but good deep tissue massage.
Oh,
but focused
okay.
In one area.
Okay.
We also do what's called sliding cupping, where we put massage oil on a bigger area, put the cup on, and then with the suction still going, slide the cup up and down, typically, again, along either side of the spinal column.
Okay.
And then afterwards, instead of having a round circle, Mark, you have a big long line.
Okay. So that would be, I mean, typically in a massage, you're when you finish, you don't have marks or bruises.
No. Right.
Is this typically with cupping, you would have some marking?
You know, it really depends on how tight you're applying the cups. And a good acupuncturist, you know, again, makes an individual judgment. How severe is the patient's pain? Have you fully informed them of the fact that they might have bruises? Because if they're going to a formal event in 2 days and they're going to wear a backless gown, they're not going to want them.
Right.
In the summer, you've got to be more careful about making sure they know that that's a possibility. You don't do them at all tight on a child or somebody who's been very sick recently or an elderly patient, but a nice, strong 40-year-old man with chronic back pain, you're going to put them pretty tight.
Okay. All right, good. What when you said earlier that Jennifer Aniston actually went to an event with a backless dress and showed those cupping marks, do you think that was on purpose?
Oh, yeah. There was. I think Gwyneth Paltrow did it, too. There have been a couple of occasions where Hollywood people have. And the rumor is that there is a Korean acupuncturist in Hollywood who charges $1,000 a session to do cupping, and that's who they all go to. But for a little while there, it was a status symbol.
I don't think it is
so much anymore, because I haven't seen it in that kind of context in a while.
Okay. So for those of us who are not living in Hollywood, how much does a session of cupping typically run in the New York tri-state area?
Well, usually it's going to be whatever the acupuncturist's usual fee for a session is.
Okay.
You know, because, and almost always it's going to be done in conjunction with some needling as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what is microbleeding?
Microbleeding is taking a little bit of blood out of a point.
Why?
In Chinese medicine, there is, again, one of these pattern diagnoses called blood stagnation, where we say the blood isn't moving well and it tends to pool in an area. So the most obvious sign of blood stagnation would be something like a hematoma. Or a big bruise where then you have that stagnant blood there.
Yes.
Also, we would consider something like a fibroid, which is has a bloody kind of character to it as to be a form of blood stagnation. Microbleeding, which is, again, it's not like bleeding was in the West 200 years ago, the kind of bleeding that supposedly killed George Washington, where they took pints of blood out of you. This is just like 10 drops. But
okay.
It has a really good effect on moving the blood through the whole circulatory system. Very effective for some types of severe pain.
So what you're saying is Chinese medicine has been, or Asian, East Asian medicine has been in the States for many, many years?
Well, everybody thinks that it came to the United States in 1971, which is when Nixon went to China, because he brought along James Reston, who was, I think he was a reporter at the time. Eventually, he was the editor of the New York Times. He had an appendectomy while he was in China. While he was in the hospital recovering from the appendectomy, they did acupuncture on him as, you know, to promote healing and to treat his pain. He wrote a big article in the New York Times. Boom, tons of interest, okay? And a lot of Americans, especially a lot of doctors and researchers, went to China to study. And then eventually brought those techniques here. Licensing laws got passed, schools started to open, etc. But what most people don't know, and this is very interesting, is that actually there were about 7 states with acupuncture licensing laws in the 1860s. Okay.
Wow.
And 1 or 2 of them still had them on the books when the Renaissance happened in the 1970s. And they were states like Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota. Why? Because the Intercontinental Railroad was being built at that time. And Chinese laborers were the people who did the work laying the railroad tracks. And where Chinese immigrants went, they brought their culture, including their medicine. So a number of those states, which would be the least that I would think California, New York, Florida would be the first ones to have licensing laws. But some of those states beat us by over 100 years.
Isn't that fascinating? But that makes so much sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How is it that some of these techniques came to be in Asia?
Well, that's the $100,000 question, and we really don't know, although, of course, there are several theories. Sort of the ongoing thought in our field was it developed slowly over time, and, you know, where the idea of the points and the channels came from, we just don't know. The interesting thing, though, is the Iceman, the guy who fell into a frozen bog in the Alps like 5,000 years ago, and they found his body flash frozen, and the National Geographic Society has control over it. And they have specials on TV about this guy every now and then and what the newest research has found. Well, the first thing they said is they thought he was a shaman. Why? Because he had evidence of having recovered from a childhood illness, and that was always an absolute requirement to be a shaman. And he had a little bag with him, a medicine bag. And they did the DNA sequencing of the material in his medicine bag, and they were all medicinal herbs. Then, not too long ago, maybe 10 years ago, they announced that what they had discovered was he actually had some acupuncture points and channels tattooed on his body. And the points were in the same place that we recognize them to be today. Now, what does that mean? Okay, he was in the Alps like 6,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Either he was a remarkably courageous person who made the trip all the way across the Eurasian continent to learn acupuncture, and instead of bringing back a book, had his own body become the textbook. Or what I think is that it was much more widespread at one point in time, and it's not so much that it originated in China as that it survived in China, where it fell out of use everywhere else.
I see.
So,
and we, in China, it dates back around 2,500.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's hard to say when acupuncture started because prior to stainless steel, needles were made out of bamboo. And they you know, decompose.
Of course.
So there's no archaeological record of the first needles.
Okay.
But we think probably at least 2,000 B.C., maybe a little earlier than that.
Okay.
And then the first book or the oldest book that we have was probably compiled around 200 BC.
And I've always had this sense of, and I don't know where I got this idea, but that Chinese medicine was passed down through families in East Asia.
Absolutely. I mean, there were a couple of different paths to becoming a doctor in China. And one of them was always being part of a family lineage, and they still exist today. One of the things you might notice if you were to decide to study acupuncture yourself is when you go to any of the acupuncture schools in the New York area, there are a lot of people from China on the faculty. And completely out of proportion, their last name is Zhang, Z-H-A-N-G.
Okay.
Why is that? Well, the author of one of the very early books, The Treatise on Cold Damage, which was highly influential, that was his name, Zhang. So family lineages, to advertise the fact that the family business was medicine, changed their name. So there are so many Dr. Zhangs in the acupuncture field. And many of them, you know, are practicing a slightly different form of acupuncture than the mainstream. That's their family style that they learned from their father and their father's father and father's father and father's father. Now, I'm saying father not out of any wish to be non-inclusive, but that's the reality of how it was in China in those days.
So what about today?
Oh, no. Today?
Yes.
In the U.S. or China?
I'm
not
sure
about China. I think in China there's probably quite a few women. I would think it's at least 50-50.
Okay.
In the U.S., in graduate schools of Oriental medicine, I don't know the exact number, but I know women outnumber men by a fairly significant margin.
Oh, interesting.
Something like, maybe 60 to 65%.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but that's very significant. Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. Where does, you know, oftentimes clients will come in and they have a naturopathic doctor that they're working with. Where does a naturopathic doctor fit into this family of East Asian study? Is it different or is it inclusive?
Oh, no, it's different. It's a different system of medicine. But in some naturopath training programs, they study a little bit of acupuncture. They are certainly probably more amenable to our treatment. It's always a lot more comfortable to work with a naturopath, if we're treating the same patient, to be able to call and have a conversation with them. A lot of MDs won't take our phone calls. I have to say, not all by any means, but and it's getting better. Every year. But, naturopaths and us, we're very compatible. And a lot of the patients that we see, if you're coming to an acupuncturist, you've probably made a decision about where you fit into the whole scheme of alternative versus conventional Western medicine. And so a lot of them are seeing naturopaths when they come to see us.
Sure. What about the herbal remedies that a naturopath would provide for a client? Would that be out of Chinese herbal medicine or out of a different approach?
It's a very different approach. The Chinese system is very unique in and of itself. The way what happens is, again, everything is based on formulas, not on the use of individual herbs. And every herb is analyzed in regards to its temperature, its taste, what channels it enters, what its functions are, what its indications are, what herbs it works well with, what herbs it doesn't work well with, etc. So it's an entire system. It's a way of looking at things, at each herb differently. And as far as I'm aware, that's really unique of all the herbal medicines in the world.
Okay, I would like to share a little bit about my own experience in some eczema that I had on my elbows, and I shared that with you about 2 years ago, and you brought in a little round container of an ointment that looked, I would say, like dark green tar. Mm-hmm. And smelled just as bad. And I was open to anything at this point because I only have the eczema just on my elbows, which I guess is very common, and it would get very, very itchy every fall and winter. And then I'd be fine over the summer, and usually in the spring it was no problem. But the minute I had to put on long sleeves, it would affect me, and it was really bothering me during work. What I found is I used the remedy that you brought over, and you had told me there was I believe it was Taiwan is where you had brought that medicine in from. I'm not sure, and you can speak to that. But
no, I think it was Chinatown.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Okay.
So right here in New York, great. I used the medicine 2 or 3 times 2 years ago. Now, this is something that I have had to deal with for, 25, 30 years. And I've gone to doctors. I've received prescription medication for it. I've never had a problem again.
Hey, I'm impressed.
Is that normal, or was that just I got really, really lucky?
Dermatology is considered to be the hardest area to treat successfully, consistently with Chinese medicine. When the first imperially sponsored medical school opened around 900 AD. The longest course of study was in dermatology. It was even longer than psychiatry. My experience treating dermatological issues is it's hit or miss. You either get a response very much like yours, an immediate response, a really positive response. I've tried 18 things and none of them have worked like this. Or you basically bang your head against the wall over a couple of months, try this, try that, try this, try that, and maybe get a 20% improvement.
Mm.
Now, for some people, a 20% improvement is still something they're happy to get.
Right.
But it's not what we would like to see, obviously.
Right.
We want everybody to be like you.
You want everyone to have a story like
right.
mine.
Exactly.
Two, 3 times I put it on and I was better the rest of my life.
Right.
I still have it just in case because the minute I decide to give it to someone or throw it out, my eczema I know will come back. So, all right. What we're going to do is take a little bit of a break. You are listening to Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Hour at 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
As we go through the afternoon, a few more sprinkles and cloudy skies, but the temperatures are warming up nicely. We're looking at mid and upper 40s, and we'll have cloudy skies for the rest of the afternoon. Tonight, skies are going to clear out. The low is about 32 degrees of the Sound Shore to about 24 north and west. Sunshine Tuesday, the high is 42. Have a great afternoon. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490 WGCH.
Listen to Anything Goes with Kim Burns. I'm Kim Burns.
And I'm co-host Meredith Bach, and we are live every Thursday at 11 a.m.
Join us for original comic news and entertainment and top-notch interviews and up-to-the-minute topics.
Join us and hear various co-hosts for far-reaching expertise on endless topics when you need to be in the know.
That's Anything Goes with Kim Burns, Thursday mornings at 11, 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com anywhere.
Good afternoon, Greenwich. You're listening to Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Hour, 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere. This is Beth O'Malley, and I am a therapist in Old Greenwich here with you this afternoon. I have a long-term friend, Tom Nash, here with me, who was in the same field as me for about 20 years, and then back in 1998 made a transition to studying acupuncture and East Asian medicine. He specializes in both acupuncture and herbal medicine and has taught at three different colleges of acupuncture in the New York area, currently on the faculty at the Tri-State College of Acupuncture. He maintains a small private practice in Hicksville, New York, and also is being coerced by me into opening a practice here in Greenwich. Thanks for coming on today, Tom. We've talked a lot about the history of traditional Asian medicine and how, you know, when it came to the States and some of the speculation around the history both abroad and here in the United States. But on a more basic level, what do people come in for primarily to be treated with for both herbal medicine and acupuncture? What are the causes that, why might someone come to you? What's the most common issue that someone comes in with?
Well, it's really a smorgasbord, but I would say currently right now, the most common things that bring people in are low back or joint pain, headaches, particularly migraines, but other forms of headaches as well. Stress and anxiety is a big one. Fertility. There's been a lot on TV, on the doctors and other kinds of shows where they've talked about the role of acupuncture in an integrative approach to fertility treatment. All sorts of menstrual disorders, irregular period, late period, PMS, etc. And then with kids, the two by far and away most common things are asthma and going back to eczema, you know, different types of skin conditions.
And with the skin conditions or with asthma, are you using both herbal medicine and acupuncture or one or the other?
When you can. Again, you know, we talk about needle phobia and kids being needle phobic. And as I said earlier, there are ways around that. Kids also don't like herbs.
Oh.
Herbs taste awful. Chinese herbal formulas taste awful.
Oh.
Now, as an adult, you can say, you know, look, I know when I take my herbs, I don't get as many headaches. They're much less severe. Basically, I can live my life. So I'm going to hold my nose and chug it down. But try selling that to a three-year-old.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, it didn't occur to me to ask you, how does one take an herbal remedy? I guess I thought it was more like a tablet or a pill.
There are three ways of doing it. One is the tablets or pills. The problem with that is, one, they're just not as strong. And two, they can't be individualized. Remember I said before that we individualize the formula for each person. So we don't want to have this herb in, we take it out, but we do want to put these other two ones in. You can't do that with a pre-made pill. But for some people, and it's not so much taste, it's more their lifestyle. They don't have time to do it any other way. Pills are a workable alternative. The second way is granules. So the herbs are cooked up into a liquid, very thick liquid, that's then sprayed on some kind of a cellulose base. It ends up looking like instant coffee. And you can put all the specific herbs that you want in this. You get a bottle of it. It's a bottle of, you know, again, it's about halfway between a fine powder and instant coffee. You mix a certain amount of that in with hot water and you drink it down. The third way, the way it's done almost exclusively in China, is we call it raw herbs, where you get a bag of herbs for every day of the week, and you cook it up. You cook it once at a certain temperature for a certain amount of time, and then you strain the herbs out, and then you put them back in the pot with more water, and you cook them a certain time, and then you combine the two different cooks, and you drink one cup in the morning and one cup at night. That's the best way in terms of the strength. Those are really the best way to get herbs into your system. The problem is, one, takes a lot of time and effort.
Sure.
Two, they stink up the house.
Ah.
And three, again, the taste is something that, you know, you really have to be committed to taking them.
Right.
When I first graduated, I really believed in the efficacy of raw herbs. And I'm a decent salesman. So I convinced almost all my patients who wanted herbs to do raw herbs. And I wrote a lot of really good, really sophisticated formulas that I know for a fact are still on people's shelves collecting dust. So at this point in time, I don't do very many raw herbs. I'm about 70% granules and maybe 20% raw and 10% pills.
Okay. So you find that the pills are going to be a lot easier for people to take, but maybe less effective.
Definitely less effective. You also have to be careful with the pills, where they're from. You know,
sure.
You want to work with a reputable herbalist. You can buy pre-made herbal pills in most Chinese grocery stores. But you really want to work with somebody who knows what they're doing to make sure, you know, that brand, there was something not so. Because sometimes what they do is they put a Westerner a drug in with it.
Oh.
So like an herbal formula to treat a cold or a sinus infection might have an antibiotic added to it.
Oh.
Or another formula that's for insomnia may have a little bit of a insomnia drug thrown into it. Now, it's illegal, but it happens. And so, again, I know who's good, who's trusted, who, you know, has passed FDA approval 18 times, et cetera, and I would only recommend those brands and not. Oh, there's another new brand. I never heard of it, but they're half as expensive.
Okay. So this is a case where it's really good to go with a formula or someone who's reputable, who's been around for quite a while.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I know here in Greenwich, we have the Greenwich Acupuncture Center, and that's where a lot of our local folks go, and I've heard good things. Where are you working out of in Long Island?
Hicksville. It's 535 South Broadway, about a half a mile south of the Hicksville train station.
All right, good. If folks want to find you, would the best way, I know that they can get in touch with you through my Facebook page, which is Be Well with Beth O'Malley Wellness. Is there another way that they might reach out to you?
They can go to Heaven and Earth Acupuncture on Facebook. They can go to my website, which is heavenandearthacupuncture.com, or they can call me at 914-393-8870.
Terrific. Thank you. And I'll have you give that number again before we wrap up today. I wanted to, going back to the different types of things that people would seek you out for, with acupuncture, it's just acupuncture. What's the most common reason that someone enters your office, and how is it that acupuncture makes a difference?
Again, probably low back pain, I would say. If there's one, low back pain, knee pain, things like that. You know, occasionally from time to time, the Western medical world gets hold of something that we do, and we see a lot of people coming in with that. So for a while, that was going back to fertility. We were getting a lot of referrals actually from fertility doctors, a lot of whom now have an acupuncture working on staff. The new thing is patients on chemotherapy. acupuncture has proven through a lot of really good empirical research to be more effective at treating the nausea, fatigue, etc., that comes from being on chemotherapy than almost anything else that's available. So a lot of oncologists as a whole tend to be a conservative lot, but they've been really frustrated that their patients feel so lousy.
Right.
And what they're finding is that we can make a difference as far as something like that goes. So we're seeing a lot of people. We are actually even getting referrals from oncologists now.
You know, that doesn't surprise me. I think it was back about 2 months ago, I had Dr. Susan Bobel on the station here on the show, and she is the chief of breast surgery in New York City at Mount Sinai Beth Israel. And one of the treatments that she was stressing for clients who had breast cancer was acupuncture, and she was thrilled to know that you were going to be coming on.
Well, both Mount Sinai and Memorial Sloan Kettering actually hire acupuncturists. They have them on staff as part of their integrative medical departments.
So, oh, terrific.
I mean, we've come a long way in just the last few years
right.
in terms of getting that kind of acceptance.
So going back to my question about, I understand the most common reasons why people come to see you, but how does putting needles in certain spots affect one's health?
That's the $80 million question. What I tell people is I can give you three ways of looking at it, and you can take your choice which one appeals to you.
Okay.
One is, although particularly if you needle in the Japanese style like me, it's virtually painless. But yet the integrity of the body is compromised. Something has entered into the skin. The body responds to that like any trauma, being cut, anything like that. So a cascade of endorphins are released. Okay, and endorphins have very powerful effects not only on treating pain and eliminating pain, but also on well-being, euphoria, just kind of feeling good. And if you feel good, feel a little euphoric, feel totally relaxed, that can have a major impact on your health. Okay. Number two, there are 360 points on the 12 regular channels, but not all points are created equal. There are some points I have never used since maybe I had to practice them in school. There are other points that I use 8 times a day when I'm in my practice. The points that we use over and over and over again for a number of different things are all located near major ganglia or nerve centers of the peripheral nervous system. And so by needling those points, the theory goes, it sends a message through the nervous system up to the brain, affecting a change. The interesting thing is when you put their head in an MRI machine or a CAT scan and then needle them, you see that there's activity in the part of the brain that point has been traditionally associated with. So points that clear heat, you will see activity in the area of the brain that regulates temperature.
Wow.
The third way of looking at it is the traditional way the Chinese always have, which is that the body is crisscrossed by a series of channels that carry qi, or life energy, and disease is a result of either the stagnation or the deficiency of qi in certain parts of the body. And by needling points on those channels, we either move the qi and break up the stagnation or enhance or tonify the qi to treat the underlying problem.
Terrific. I can't thank you enough for joining us here today, Tom. And I'd like you just to give your number once again.
It's 914-393-8870.
Thank you so much. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth, part of the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour on 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere. Have a great day.
You're listening to the Voice of Greenwich.